Pobrecito, te duele tu espaldito. Necesitas un abogadito para ayudar a tu familia. Estamos contigo. Pobrecito, por favor no te enojes conmigo. Por el mejor consejo que te digo, vamos juntos por el mejor objetivo.
Yeah,
well, this sounds good.
Quiero ver su caso, ser su
sounds like Enrique.
Que me digas tus problemas.
Wow.
Para ayudarte con ganas, amigo.
Yeah, but those bar rolls
quiero
are not
good. Caso, ser su
he is good at something.
Que me digas tus problemas. Para ayudarte con ganas, amigo.
Anyone care to?
All right, everyone. That's our own Evan Garcia singing a song, and I don't know what he said, but
pobrecito.
It's not about
means poor little thing,
poor little
Brad.
Child, poor little
oh,
thing.
Poor little baby.
They raised Brad speaking Australian. We were Spanish as kids.
What?
Yeah, Brad was only taught Australian as his foreign language when we were kids.
That's why yes. He loves Outback Steakhouse so much.
That's right. That's why I love Bloomin' Onions.
They're good.
Welcome, everybody, to this morning's episode of the Justice Team Podcast. We have an exclusive Justice Team panel today because we're going to talk about a subject that I think Bob rolls around the state in and gives seminars on. It's a subject for
it's an
a
alcohol
lot of-
abuse one.
MCLE for substance abuse.
Cheers to that.
So it's... This deals a lot with pre-trial evidence and definitely in-trial evidence, and it's an issue that a lot of people get confused on when trying to line up experts or non-retained experts. What can they talk about? What they can't talk about? And then we'll even get into how this looks on appeal and what can get overturned, excluded, admitted, etc. But before we begin, let's talk about these cocktails that Mr. Murat DeBehan whipped up for us this morning. What do we got, Murat?
So this cocktail I just invented right on the spot.
What?
Yeah. True story. So it's a third of a glass of ice. Key to this cocktail. Third of a glass ice. Vodka, preferably French, but we're not going to name names since we don't have an official sponsor. OJ, dash of club soda, and a splash of cranberry. But we don't have a name for this cocktail yet. So, you know, if anyone's got any suggestions.
So viewers out there, if you want to... Take a guess, or I guess name this cocktail.
Name this
the
original
CFO.
Cocktail
name
that
this
was just
completely
invented.
Completely original cocktail, never been yeah, never been drunk before.
First time anyone's ever had this combination.
We are going to talk about the case called People vs. Sanchez.
Good transition.
Just like Bob did early in his life. Let's introduce the panel. Starting with my far left, we got my twin brother.
Hi.
Who just turned 40. Congratulations. Happy birthday. I didn't get you anything. Maybe.
I didn't get you anything either.
Oh, this is awkward.
It is. Shit, I forgot. Whatever. You're welcome. Hi. That's all I got.
Okay.
Keep going.
Hi. Brandon Simon, the other brother, the better brother.
Best brother.
Best brother.
Of course, me, Brad Simon. To my right, we have...
Brooke Bove.
She does her appeals.
In-house appeals.
The nerdiest one.
Yeah. We played Dungeons and Dragons this week. In
oh,
an
yeah,
attic.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so you're clearly the nerdiest one.
Did you play?
Did I play? Yeah. No, I did not play Dungeons and Dragons. I have never played Dungeons and Dragons in my life. Did I just lose my nerd card?
Pretty much.
Not a life worth living.
Damn.
Yeah.
Mm.
Is it too late at 42 to start?
No,
never too late.
Okay. Never too late. And last, and certainly least.
Hi. I'm Sevi.
God.
Sevi Fisher.
So I wanted to give you a little bit of background on Sanchez. When I give these talks, I like to give a little bit of an overview because it's simply just evidence. I mean, it's what we learned in law school. The problem is it was people were misapplying it. We had medical doctors up there for the defense, mostly just regurgitating things. They read medical records and it was bananas. And the Court of Appeal finally decided to step down, but it's actually a criminal case. And there's a big misnomer that civil lawyers are like, well, it's a criminal case. It doesn't apply. Come on, dummy. Brooke, does it apply?
It absolutely applies. Come on, dummy. Evidence is evidence is evidence.
That's right. So People vs. Sanchez was a criminal case, and it came to play because Sanchez was arrested, and there was three criminal charges essentially that went to trial on, and one of which was a gang enhancement trial or a charge. And for gang enhancement, you had to prove that they were in a gang and in order to get the enhancement. So what the prosecution did in this case is instead of calling the police officers or the people that had actual knowledge of him being in a gang or him saying that he was in a gang, they called just one expert who went up there and took the stand and says, yeah, somebody told me he was in a gang, so yeah, he's in a gang. And they convicted him on a gang enhancement charge. So it went up in the Court of Appeal, and it's like, you can't really do that. I mean, the reason being is you had an expert up there talk about something that he heard, which is hearsay.
But Sevi, can't experts rely on hearsay, though? They Isn't can that the rule of evidence?
They can rely on hearsay, but they cannot regurgitate hearsay.
And they can't form their sole opinion.
Right. And there's a big difference in saying, like, hey, you know, I reviewed all this information, and based on all this information and, you know, maybe my examination of the plaintiff, you know, this is my opinion. They can't say, well, I reviewed all this information, and, oh, guess what this information says? Dr. So-and-so said X, Y, Z. So big difference in that's something that they often confuse, even judges confuse. Relying on hearsay does not mean regurgitating hearsay.
So we got to almost educate the judges. And Brandon, we do kind of – you do a lot of motions in limine. And do you do any specifically on this case or a trial brief?
How we do one specifically on medical record hearsay. I think even before Sanchez came out, we were filing this proactively because, like Bob said, for us that are up on the evidence code, it didn't really – it shouldn't have changed the way evidence was coming in. It just, I guess, made it more clear. It's still hearsay. It's always been hearsay, but there was a little bit more lax rules. The judges were kind of letting in hearsay without foundation because you can rely on hearsay. So they were kind of
a big catch-all that they were. They still get it wrong.
Right. So we actively file motions in limine regarding Sanchez. We educate the judge. It's still. I feel like most judges now are getting it more now that Sanchez came out, right?
But there's still seminars on it. I've spoken at a few of them for that. But you understand, hearsay is an out of court
statement used to prove the truth of the matter asserted,
and you have to have an exception,
or a non hearsay exception.
We had 2 years of this in law school to learn this very simple.
It's like it's literally the first thing you learn in evidence.
Apparently, the first thing forgotten in trial practice.
The biggest problem with it is that. Judges give, experts so much rope, and just let them do whatever they want. And they just think, oh, well, he can rely on it. Therefore, he can pretty much do whatever he wants. The problem, that's the problem, is you got to rein in those experts. Just because they're an expert doesn't mean they get to get up there and violate all the evidence.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a perfect example. Stuff we see all the time in our cases is you have a radiology report or an MRI report. You have the defense doctor get up there and say, well, what did you rely on for your opinion? Well, I read the MRI report. The MRI report says that it's a degenerative condition. Wait, objection, hearsay. And a lot of times judges would overrule it. Well, they relied on it. Whoa. So here's the problem. Did we get a chance to cross-examine or question the radiologist on his findings? We have another doctor up here saying his findings are based on the findings of someone else that never saw the scans themselves. I mean, obviously, you can cross-examine them on it, but it was just garbage. This was going on for years. Well, your client has... mesothelioma. Well, how do you know? Well, I saw in a medical record that someone else diagnosed him with it. Wait, what? So just a practical tip for everybody out there that is prepping your experts to make sure there's a fail-safe for them to be able to testify, because they can get excluded under Sanchez. Just have them say, based on my training, education, and experience, review the medical records, this is my opinion. That's okay.
Right.
Because you're not regurgitating hearsay. But if you start to just parrot, if it's just solely based on opinions of others, that's where you're going to run into a problem. Brandon's going to get you excluded.
And backing that up even more, it kind of dovetails into if, they do have to call that radiologist. Mm-hmm. And in that radiology report, it's all opinions. Mm-hmm. So dovetailing into that, if they say, well, we'll just call the radiologist to trial, make sure that radiologist is on the defense's 2034 designation, because if they're not, they can't give opinions at trial, and that's all that they do in that report. So they're excluded altogether if they're not on the 2034.
Where preemptively, I'm just thinking, do we... preemptively, before you go to a trial, do you say, hey, here's a trial brief on Sanchez? Or do you say, specifically in this case, we think the defense is going to try to get this into evidence, and we're not going to let them because they got a X, Y, like what Bob just went over. As a practical strategic matter, do you do that on cases, or do you let them, like Sevi said, wait until trial, and then they don't have them on the 2034 and it gets excluded?
I think you have to give the judge a heads up if they're specific. Yeah. I mean, I usually file
They'll ask you.
Your motions in limine should come after their designation.
Yeah, so I usually file one, a broad one. It's more like a pocket brief or like a trial brief, but I call it a motion in limine and basically... it's not really a proper motion to eliminate under the Kelly versus New West federal savings trial or case, because you're not actually identifying evidence. But I'll usually do that for the first crop of Motions Eliminate, and then once expert depots are being completed, actually put citations into a new Motion Eliminate saying he's specifically violating Sanchez here, 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 and here.
Right, so
they can't give that opinion.
I think general it is and specific.
I think right. it is proper as general because you're saying medical records. You're identifying all the evidence. There's yeah, a laundry true. List of medical records that you're identifying, and you're letting the judge know that. And making them specific, I think, is bad because then you're letting the defense know what you're afraid
of. And I'm going to give you a real one where we got a lot of excluded. We had a case recently that Sevi and I were trying, and we had a client that had years, tens, decades of medical treatment for a back condition, and the defense's position was, well, it was due to his pre-existing other car crashes he was in or he's hurt at work. So when I took the deposition, because we know Sanchez very well, I kept asking him to specifically identify what he's relying on that says that these prior are from prior incidences, and he couldn't name them. He couldn't name the date. He couldn't name the medical record, and we went to exclude, and the judge is like, well, he says he doesn't know. He was able to point, like, I said, how many times of prior medical pain or back pain did he have? He could point to two over 25 years. And I made him pull out the record and I attached it. And the judge said, guess how many incidents of prior back pain he can talk about? Two.
Right.
Because the defense wanted to talk about like 50. And he's like, and guess what? You have to call the doctor to lay the foundation unless the plaintiff, you can get in through the plaintiff at any time. It's a failsafe. Because the plaintiff is a person that's there to testify, they can talk about their prior pain, their medical
but
condition.
But they're not going
to
remember.
That's practice. If they're prepped correctly.
Exactly.
So, Brooke, how does this look on, like, an appellate level? You have a case goes, like, for the plaintiff goes south because the defense expert went up there and just said, well, this is what Dr. So-and-so diagnosed him with in 2 years ago.
Well, make sure you don't waive Sanchez, right?
Right, yeah. That's the first thing. I'll make sure you're laying your objections.
We see that a lot of defense.
The best is the motion in limine. You've got it. The request and the entering. It's like entering a pre-objection before trial that you're going to object to it.
Preserving
and then at trial, don't miss your chance to object. And then after that, it becomes just a battle of case law. But
so what would be the standard if that happened there's a defense verdict and of course the trial court doesn't grant a new trial?
So it's really important to try to get it right at trial because on appeal, it's a discussion of what evidence was admitted. And so the standard of care is abuse of discretion. Mm-hmm. So the court of appeal is always, when it's an evidence-related issue, is always going to say the standard of review is abuse of discretion. So you've got to prove not just that the court made a mistake, but that it abused its discretion in making the mistake because the court gets to use its discretion.
Yeah, it still has to be a prejudicial error as well.
Well,
right?
So that's the second tier. Yeah. So if you can get to the level of proving that it's an abuse of discretion, then you've got to prove that, okay, so there's an error, but how did that actually prejudice?
So you better get a juror declaration saying,
you better.
I found.
Yes,
we found this way because of this prior record.
Practical
that he
tips: what can we do out there to perfect that? Because I could see a court of appeals going, no harm, no foul.
Well, so a juror declaration is gold. If you can get a juror to say that in a declaration, it's really difficult.
What can you say?
So in a juror declaration, can you just say this is what we talked about and this was what we found? Or
well, you have to be really careful with juror declarations too, because then you're getting into more hearsay issues, right? You can't say I was in the jury room and I heard two people saying XYZ and that's and they were the holdouts and that's why we didn't get the verdict, because now you've only got a hearsay statement of what other jurors were saying. You have to say I participated in this discussion, this was the topic of conversation, and you have to make sure you phrase it in a way that's not this person said or X person
and not their mental impression.
How about
it's got to be,
we came down no on the substantial factor question because of the prior back pain.
Got to elaborate a little more on that.
Yeah, because we believed the defense expert when he was talking about the prior conditions or the prior issues, and we believed the defense expert. We found him more credible because he was giving all these facts about the past stuff. The more specific you can be, the better.
I get a lot of questions from people. You know, we're always on the listservs. People always ask, should I waive Sanchez? And we always tell them no.
Absolutely not.
No.
Because it's a big sword for the plaintiff's bar. But the reason
it's
that,
evidence.
The reason a lot of people want to waive it is
lazy.
It's short. It's not lazy. It's short-sighted. Lazy. They are afraid to have to pay all of these expenses to get these doctors into at trial to lay the foundation. And one of the tools that we use, that we always tell people to utilize, is the defense will always list every non-retained treating doctor under the sun. And when they do that, you are able to then take their deposition under videotape under a certain code section, and then you can play those videotape depositions at trial. So you're not having to call these experts, these doctors, the trial to lay the foundation. Yeah. You have them on videotape laying the foundation, so you can take a
and
direct
exam. That's a big
misnomer.
And a lot of people think that, I mean, what? Actually, there's been studies that videotape depositions with the word scrolling at the bottom are more paid attention to by jurors today than actual live testimony. Thank our cell phones, right? I mean, but that's true. So I mean, we do a lot of videotape depositions, and you could do it in discovery. And by code, MDs are always unavailable. So you could play.
Well, non-retained MDs are unavailable.
Yeah.
The opposing expert isn't. But you can still, well, if it's the opposing party's expert, you can still play it under that. They don't have to be unavailable.
Yeah. Right. So just from a foundation perspective, Sevi, how are ways our listeners can lay foundation so they don't get in issues with, I'm going to give you some examples, your life care planner up there. Another example, having your medical doctor talk about all the treatment your client had or specific instances that your client went through. What are some stuff that you do to lay the foundation for those experts?
Well, with life care planners, I think it's, you know, this is always a topic of discussion, but I always make sure my life care planners are prepped from deposition to say, you know, based on my, because they have a bunch of sources for their numbers, right? They're always giving numbers. They're giving reasonable and customary costs in the community, and they're giving those for past and future oftentimes. So what I have them make sure they say is like, look, yes, I go to these sources, I rely on these sources, but these are my independent opinions based on my X years in as an expert doing this stuff. Even if I, you know, and if they really get pressed on it in deposition, so you wouldn't be able to give me an opinion on how much a single level lumbar L5-S1 fusion is if you wouldn't have gone and looked at, you know, healthcare, Fair Health online, correct? No, that's not true. I could give you something within, you know, $10,000, give or take, what's reasonable and customary in the community. And that's appropriate, you know, because damages have to be reasonable. They don't have to be exact. They have to be reasonable and customary in the community.
What about life care planners that call, you know, providers and ask them, you know, what's the cash rate or whatever? You know, what do you guys charge for XYZ? Then you're dealing with another level of hearsay, right? You're relying on something somebody else told you to put into your report.
Right. And, you know, oftentimes I've seen it go both ways. I've seen it, you know, these life care planners do that to, and if it's my life care planner, I tell them, you did that to confirm what you already knew.
Exactly.
But if it's their life care planners, I said, well, you that cost specifically came from that facility. And that facility, you know, we had an expert that flew in from Phoenix one time, and he didn't know the reasonable and customary cost in the community. He had to call these people up, and he got excluded from saying that because he didn't know.
And there's a difference, and Sanchez talks about it, the difference between case-specific hearsay and non-case-specific hearsay.
Yes, exactly.
So what does that mean? Tell us about that.
Tell us what that means, because I don't know.
Right, so case-specific.
I know, I just want to hear you say it.
non-case-specific hearsay is what you're talking about. Like, that's the books that you're reading, the training that you're getting as an expert, all the CLE classes we take, that's stuff that we're learning about the law that makes us experts. That's non-case specific. Mm-hmm. It's general. It applies to lots of different situations.
It exists in the universe without the case.
No matter what. If this case didn't exist, you would still have that knowledge and you would still have that information that came from other sources. Case
and that's
specific,
okay.
And that's fine. Yeah. That's great. Case specific hearsay is stuff that is directly and specifically only related to this case. It's the facts, it's the comments, it's the testimony, it's the it's the experiences of just the parties in the case.
Yeah, so you could make that argument that even calling those people and getting those prices is not necessarily case specific. You could say, well, look, this is what they charge everybody. It's not necessarily just specific to this case.
Yeah, and for life care planning specifically, because we deal with a lot of this in our bar, is those coding sources, American Health and the American Hospital Directory, they exist. That's not case-specific hearsay. That exists in the universe. It's available to all parties. And sometimes, like, the defense or other people try to confuse that. But that's not what the Sanchez deals with. We're dealing with, and let's do some, like, specific examples. Like, in this case, my life care planner is giving opinions on the cost of future medical care based on the recommendation of somebody else. That recommendation of somebody else is case-specific hearsay. It's determined on the case-specific facts. So, Sevi, how do we lay the foundation for that?
Well, your doctor's going to testify to that, first of all.
Yeah.
Right?
Once it's in evidence, it's not
no
hearsay.
It's no longer hearsay.
Yeah.
So your doctor made those recommendations as their own opinions. And I guess if they want to be really technical and your life care planner has to go out of order.
Well, actually, the case, the Sanchez actually says specifically, and if you read the case, I think everybody should.
I'm sure Bob read the case.
I did. Not. I had somebody else read it to me and tell me what it said. But it actually says, as long as it's reasonably certain to come into evidence.
Right.
So you can take it out of order. However, I always put this on the judge's radar, and I tell them, look, if you're going to let this expert testify about it and the defense doesn't call that person to lay the foundation, it's excluded, right, judge?
Right.
Yes. And the judge will tell the jury, and I've had it happen. Excluded. That opinion they gave, gone.
I have a question, because we had a colleague run into this recently against the notorious defense attorney. You brought up MRI reports. What about MRI films?
Oh, my God. This fear infuriates me. MRI
Bob,
films.
Bob angry.
I'm angry. MRI films are not an opinion. It's like looking at a photograph. It's not an opinion about a photograph.
Right.
It's self-authenticating.
Yeah, because what's the first prong of a hearsay? It's got to be an out-of-court statement.
Yeah, it's an electronic printout.
It's 1,000 words.
Right.
Yeah. So it's nice. It's somebody's opinion based on the read. That is a Sanchez issue.
But it's still, there's a difference between authenticity.
You got that question
there's
yesterday.
A difference between authenticity and foundation,
yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah. Okay, I'm 100% okay. Oh, yeah, I'll stick to authenticity. That's fine.
Sure.
Right.
That's why it's so important to get a good judge.
What about when you have, like, okay, Seb, we've got... You need an accident reconstruction, or you have like someone going out to do an inspection, a site inspection. What kind of here Sanchez violations or Sanchez things should you be careful of when your expert or somebody else is going to do that?
Measurements, things like that, out at site inspections, things like that. Oftentimes, these senior engineers will send their junior engineers to do that, and then these senior engineers are the ones who you've retained. So be careful with that. If it's a big, large case, I make sure that senior engineer is out at that site inspection. If it's maybe a smaller case, and they let the junior one go out there,
I list them all.
You don't have to, but list them. List the junior engineers as non-retained, or I guess that's technically retained. They are retained.
Because you can still get a stipulation,
right.
A narrow stipulation, like
right.
We can stipulate to the measurements. But on that, Brad, so whenever we're dealing, if you look at the police report, that's all case-specific hearsay. If you're trying to get in measurements from the cops at the scene or things they saw, you need the officers to do
right.
That.
And just a practice tip, like in the real world, obviously everybody disagrees about what this says, and what Sanchez, the holding in Sanchez means is whatever your judge says it means. So, what I like to do, and I did this in a trial, a very big case, the defense attorney before my accident recon got up there, he goes, well, what are we going to do about Sanchez? Like, are we waiving Sanchez or are we going into... I go, look, we're not waiving Sanchez, but my expert's going first. I'm going to direct him. Watch what I do. Don't give me shit, and I won't give you shit. And that's exactly what I said to him, because look, they can make our lives miserable on certain things if they really want to, if the judge doesn't understand Sanchez, which most of them, a great majority of them don't, and we can make their life miserable. You want to have a trial? Just watch what I do, because we go first, and if you object a bunch and it's just frivolous stuff, then I'm going to do the same to you. So,
and there's a point. I mean, sometimes it's stuff like if there's stuff in the medical records you know are false and like taken out of context and the defense is trying to get it in, don't stip to medical records. I never would do. But I had one lawyer fighting me on the damn speed limit where the accident happened on a liability dispute. Yeah. I had to call
the same one who objected to the hearsay on the MRI film.
Yeah. And then another case, he had the complete opposite position. Well, whatever. I had to bring in a city engineer to talk about the darn speed limit. I mean,
there was a sign.
The judge was mad at him too. Yeah. There was a sign out there. It was so silly, but it was a recoverable cost.
What
about
back? I have a lot of questions because I don't know the answer to this. Does Sanchez apply on cross exam?
Yes, and that's a big misnomer. And it says it in Sanchez. A lot of times they say, "Well, you could do anything in cross. You can cross on the records." No, you cannot. If you're using case specific stuff out of the medical records, again, it has to be reasonably certain to come in through the trial. And I think that's one big thing we put into our.
So you're
briefs.
Saying like the defense attorney can't say. Well, on April 19th, 2017, Dr. Patel said this, didn't he, to their expert?
Can't do that.
Yeah. Okay.
And some judges read that incorrectly, but if you actually read the case, it says completely opposite. And what I do is I object, I preserve my objections, and then I go up on redirect, and I hold up a blank piece of paper. I say, well, you understand the lawyers can say anything, right? The judge read that jury instruction. They'd be like, well, yeah. And I was like, well, let me read you this. Isn't it true that Dr. Patel says it was all traumatic related and da-da-da-da-da? And they go, objection. I say, well, see? We could say anything we want. Then I go in closing and say, "Where? Like, these medical records aren't even evidence. These people are just making stuff up, and it looks desperate."
You got to prepare for all of it. I think at the end of the day, before trial,
prepare like it's coming in.
I prepare like everything's coming in. And knowing the medical records, and you know, oftentimes that stuff's taken out of context. So I think you prepare for it to come in, and prepare for how you will deal with that coming in. I think that's a, you know, always for all trials, we just you know, act as though it's coming in. So.
And who is the one person at trial that can get in most everything for you?
Plaintiff.
Mm-hmm. Your client can pass medical treatment they went through, things they saw and observed. That's not hearsay.
And what's your advice if the defense attorney?
This isn't my advice, but I'm just saying, like, if you did this, it's very good lawyering. If you told your client, if I'm showing you something on the stand, you remember it, that's your signature, that's accurate. If anybody else does, you have no memory, that's not true. Can't get it in. And if that happens,
you know, we went over the records with them.
Not we. I'm just saying I heard somebody that does this. That's probably really good at doing it.
The royal we.
That's a good idea.
Bob, how about prior similar occurrences? How does that weave into the Sanchez?
So prior similar occurrences, if you're doing a premises case, it's used for a different purpose. So always look for exceptions. So that can go to notice.
Notice. Mm-hmm.
There's all kind of different creative ways to get
around. You're not using it to prove the truth of the matter asserted. It's not hearsay.
Look, and don't be too I mean, I put up a list of all the evidence code and exceptions. They're on the counsel table with me at all times. Some people think they have to memorize everything, and you probably should. But if you don't, just have a list there.
No, I always say, like, being a lawyer is knowing where to look for the information that you need all the time. Nobody can have it all.
Brooke,
in your
head. Often are you doing an appeal and it frustrates you to no end that trial counsel's not preserving the record and not objecting?
Every time. There's no, that's the worst. And it will sink your appeal. Yeah. It makes you have nothing to stand on.
I mean, there are cases that says if you don't preserve the objection at the time, you're done.
Yeah, you have to lay that foundation.
When you object,
because the court's going to say, like, well, nice that some other appellate attorney came in after the fact and saw what should have been done, but that didn't help your client at the time. This could have prevented all this work. Yeah.
When you object, would you say just objection Sanchez, objection hearsay?
Objection hearsay,
just
Sanchez.
Have Steve Fleshman argue your MILs for you.
I saw him yesterday, by the way. But, I mean, it's true. And I'll do speaking objections sometimes to cue that, because I had a jury. There's one case called Kennebur. For our listeners that don't know that, it means that when an expert gives their opinions at the time of depositions, that's what they're locked into. They can't go into new subjects. So I had one trial, and I was getting completely new opinions. The judge was inept, and I kept objecting Kennebur, new opinion, objection Kennebur, and I kept getting overruled. And one of the jurors came up afterwards, after they defensed me, and said, "What's Kennebur?" And I had to explain it to her. But we appealed and won the appeal. It was a dead bang. There was like five things. The first one was like, those were all new opinions. They were clearly prejudiced. We got juror declarations because we have a good appellate lawyer. Brooke told us what to do. But I had to preserve all of those exact objections every single time it happened.
So it sounds like when you do your expert designation, you just want to list everyone as non-retained, right, Sevi, just in case you want to get it in evidence later.
No. You don't.
Ooh, trick question.
You want to make sure. That's why you need to, you know, go through your medical records beforehand and list everybody who helps you. Never list a radiologist ever, unless their report, which they rarely do, because radiologists aren't really trained to say, "Oh, well, this is a traumatic. You know, I see a traumatic finding at L5-S1, or I see a traumatic finding at, you know, C4-5."
they might, but you got to talk to them first.
Yeah, talk to them.
Yeah. So. You know, if they will testify and they can say that based on looking at the MRI alone, then list them. But you know, you got to do your homework before you do your designation. That's for sure.
Chiropractors will kill you. Don't list chiropractors non-retained because they always have pain diagrams.
They're diagnosing people with radiculopathy, bro.
Yeah. Because you don't want them to take the defense to take their deposition and say, "Well, they're your expert,
right?
You know, they listed you."
And just remember, like, practically speaking, jurors are going to trust a treating doctor 100 times over any retained gun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I always think they win your case.
How important is it to, I guess, when you're doing expert discovery, do we affirmatively notice those depositions, or do you wait to the defense and then join
Depends.
Them? Like, what's the best way to do that?
Depends
on if they help you. 9 times out of 10, the defense will list non-retains that will help you. And
Nine times out of ten, they're gonna take every single non-retained expert depo because they don't really care about the cost on the case.
What's the one case? So we got this the other day. The attorney says, "You listed like 24 non-retains. Please list everyone you plan to call at trial." Isn't there a case that says, "Sorry, bro"? Yeah. Do you remember it?
The case?
Yeah.
what, cumulative experts?
Yeah, well, the one that says if we're non-retained, you don't have to tell them the ones that you're calling.
Yeah, I don't know the name off the top of my head.
I knew it. He failed. Epic fail. But anyways, like, you don't know who you're going to call, and I think we're using...
Guess who's writing your motions lemonade from now on?
Not you.
Not me. Have fun with that.
But you got to use Sanchez for the judge. Say, Your Honor, we have to lay the foundation. You can't. You get right. a cumulative one, but it can't be cumulative because you have to lay the foundation for it. So it's another free shot to be able to get with it. That doctor thinks during the course and scope of their treatment, because your doctor has to, your expert has to rely on at the end. So I like to do it affirmatively if we can, sometimes in discovery, because you could still do it in discovery because you can't take the chance that the other side's going to list them as a non-retained. But sometimes we're coming into trial after the expert designation already happened. So die be cast.
So for our listeners, Bob, do you have any parting words of advice of how to use Sanchez?
Okay. I do.
Okay.
But I'll wait till episode two. No, just kidding. So I think it's very important, and Brooke runs one of our lit teams and our appellate division, is you have to affirmatively look at all of your medical records and see who helps you.
Right.
And if you talk to them ahead of time, and then if you listen to them as a non-retained, that's how you win a lot of these cases. And I think you have to be overly cautious whenever you're designating to list all those that help you and all those ones that help you prove a fact in trial. I talk to my experts, like for accident recons, hey, did you actually go to the scene? Or hey, who did the video analysis? Who did the animation? Because you have to list them on your designation or you're struck. There's another thing that's a non-self, in my opinion, self-authenticating electronic data that you need a specialist to do, and that's the black box.
Right.
So a black box, you need to have a special certificate to be able to download it, analyze it. So Brandon shaking said no, but I think the answer...
What?
Yeah, don't. I know it. Stop it. I actually think that whoever downloads that black box has to be listed as an expert because nobody else can rely on their... It's an interpretation, even though it's a printout.
It's a computer.
It's not a computer.
0-1-1-1-0.
Well, can you...
Authenticated.
Why don't you go download it then, 65 Brandon?
65 miles an hour. Crash. Delta
oh
V-100.
Oh, my God. It was another guy.
Yeah. And public places, you can always just have we had a case recently, really good expert, senior guy, and one of his junior guys went out to the scene.
He's a safety expert?
I think it was before we got on board. No, not that one. He's also great.
Would you give him an A?
But he, yeah.
Okay.
But went out to a local Hooters, and the senior guy actually went out there. I just said, look, to avoid any Sanchez issues, since your junior guy went out there and did all the measurements, just go out there, have a beer and some naked spicy wings, and just confirm his measurements while you're out there.
Order
and
Sevy
was
Sanchez.
There too, and he's like, okay. So we had a lot of
you were there too.
So we had some naked wings and curly fries with cheese on them.
Was it in San Diego?
So good.
Did you go to that Hooters in San Diego?
No, Hollywood.
It's Hollywood. We have a case coming up with that one.
Yeah. My advice would be just don't ever, ever waive Sanchez. Mm-hmm. If it's, I'm shocked at the amount of people that ask that question on the listserv, or why wouldn't I do it? I get just to bring in all these medical records without authentication. Well, yeah, dummy, because they're gonna just take things out of context and cherry pick.
Well, and
you had neck pain once in 2002. It's like, yeah, someone punched me and I went away the next day.
And the best way to do it, what I like to do,
is that what happened to you? Is that why?
I like to tell.
I always wonder what happened to you in 2002, bro.
I ran into a basketball pool, teeth first.
Two
that wasn't dad.
What? No, it was me.
No, he pushed. Dad spanked you.
Dad pushed you.
Oh, yeah.
No, two things, though, as a practice tip. If defense ever comes up to you and says, hey, are we waving Sanchez? Ask them what that means to them.
Oh, yeah.
That's always great to hear. And then two, is if challenge, just say, look, I can't, just waive all medical records coming to Sanchez on all medical records. Send me the ones you want in. I'll probably agree. And then they'll say.
Oh, she does this in front of judges to challenge him, and it's really entertaining.
Yes, and judges are always like, sounds pretty reasonable. We've got thousands of medical records. I'm not going to comb through all of them and just tell you I'll waive Sanchez, but
And Sammy's getting a free preview of what their cross is going to be. They have
exactly. And the judges are going to be good. Like, counsel, it's good. Either you haul in 30 custodians of records or give Mr. Fisher what you want, and he'll probably agree to it. Yes, Your Honor, we're reasonable.
And you ain't agreeing to that, are you?
Yeah.
You sneaky.
One quick question. I think we're running out of time, but what about in terms of medical bills? Does that...
Medical bills.
Is that case-specific hearsay, like a medical...
I
know there's other foundations.
Medical bills are case-specific hearsay. However, medical bills themselves are not evidence. You could look at the Bermudez case, the Ochoa case. So I never admit medical bills and evidence. It's just what is the reasonable customary cost in the community based on what?
Your knowledge, experience, training.
thank you very much, and then that's you're good.
So you don't say like, hey, you have this bill. How much was it? Was it reasonable? You no, can't do that. How about you fly. Just say, okay, and your reason in your experience training
you get stipulations.
What's though. Your you know what is the reasonable customary value of a neck fusion global? Yeah.
$2 million,
and then you just you hit that other prong of you know Hal and the progeny by asking your client you know approximately how much do you owe for all your medical treatment?
Yeah, they know approximately.
They do.
How much was paid? You know things
they have
like
a good
this.
Estimate.
Yeah, Brooke, any parting words from the appellate division?
Well, I mean, whenever you're just kind of confused or not sure what how it applies, I mean, just take it back to the law school level. Take it back to the basics. What is evidence? And what's hearsay, and take is the thing that you're trying to exclude or object to, does it take, is it a case-specific fact? Just go back to the basics of the case and, you know, synthesize out what it's going
to
be. Just
are you able
basic.
To prove or disprove that fact with the witness that's on the stand?
Right, and if the witness on the stand is the only source of that fact, then it's hearsay, and the expert cannot rely on it.
I have one quick thing before we go. We have to talk about this. Is when they say when the defense says and the judge says, well, it's a business record exception for the medical records.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
Brandon already said it. Authentication.
Yeah,
that's a business record is exception authenticates the document.
That's it.
But it does not mean that the information in the document is
nurse
not hearsay.
Practitioner.
Yeah, it does.
Assistant MD.
Like an event.
All this crazy.
That's it. There's like three specific things that you get into the business record, not the opinion of somebody else.
Right.
And that's
right.
A big like that's a big issue. So a lot of judges get that wrong.
A lot of it. I mean, I'd say the majority of attorneys don't understand that.
I think
like
that's
an overwhelming
true.
Majority of attorneys don't understand what the business records exception is.
There's four in this room.
What?
I was just counting.
1, 2, 3, not it.
Damn it.
Oh, man. I guess I'm it.
Sorry, I had to vent about that one. That one, that is just, ugh.
Well, it's a business record exception.
So what comes in a business record exception?
You still have to lay the foundation for what's contained within
with
the document.
What's contained. So it's like an act, event, right. Or condition.
Like
it's
this event happened on this date.
Correct, because you can get into the plaintiff. You can ask those questions. Like that is a business record exception. They were here on this date. And usually if there's something in quotes from the plaintiff, you're going right. to be able to get that in.
More often than not, that's going to be the main stuff that comes in as complaints or statements from the plaintiff within those medical records.
Not opinions.
Not right. opinions.
Not opinions, right. Because a lot of that stuff can be copy and pasted even, like from ambulance records.
Any Kaiser
or
record. Yeah. They just list like 50 different diagnoses that may have ever happened in this.
I've been 175 pounds for 20 years. It's going to be copy and pasted into all of my documents.
Man, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Savvy, any parting words before we get out of here?
Yeah. I would just say you have to, you know, with Sanchez issues, you got to be able to adapt. No one's ever going to get it right. No one's ever going to get it the way you understand it. If they do, you're in great shape. But you just got to be able to adapt at trial and do your best and prepare for the worst.
Excellent. Well, that's our education seminar on the Sanchez case for Bob, Brandon, Brad, Brooke, Sevi, and Murat. I'm Brad Simon. Remember, there's no sleep till justice. Take us out, Timmy.
Pobrecito. Te duele tu espaldito. Necesitas un abogadito para ayudar a tu familia. Estamos contigo. Pobrecito. Por favor, no te enojes conmigo. Por el mejor consejo que te digo, vamos juntos por el mejor objetivo. Quiero ver su caso, ser su mejor amigo. Que me digas tus problemas para ayudarte con ganas, amigo. Quiero ver su caso, ser su mejor amigo. Que me digas tus problemas para ayudarte con ganas, amigo. Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito. No vamos gritando, no más habladito. Dime tus problemas, quítate las penas y yo tomo su caso con delicadeza. Oye, oh, yeah.